Hi, I'm Sophie Luff, and you're listening to How's That, the cricket podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of How's That, the cricket podcast with me, Ollie.
And me, Lily.
We've had a little bit of cricket so far in the last couple of weeks that we've got to talk about, and I think we have to start with the WPL. Obviously, the women's answer to the IPL. And it has been so, so good to watch. It's so good to have this competition in the, you know, in the stratosphere, in the world, in international cricket. We've got an absolutely top, top class competition in T20. And it's so good to see. We've had the grand final ever so recently. And Lily, you're very, very happy with how it all panned out.
Yeah, I'm very glad I put it out there that I was going for the Mumbai Indians before they actually won, because then it would have looked very bandwagon. But no, it's okay, because they've won, and the Mumbai Indians beat the Delhi Capitals, which was another sort of very mini little How's That rivalry, and I managed to come out on top of that one. So I think it's fair to say, but that by this point, maybe I've won in our cricket battles. Do you think?
Well, I would probably say so, given the fact you've got two titles.
Yeah.
I think my teams have won more games against the opposition, but I think virtue of the fact you've got two championships.
Yeah, you can't really go past
this
it.
And then the Women's Big Bash. Even as passionate as I've been trying to be, is trying to claim this, I don't think I can.
But, one New Year's Eve game isn't going to cut it.
It was fun. Look, the New Year's Eve game, honestly, was one of the best cricket memories I've got. And I'm not just saying that because I'm sat on a recording on a Zoom with you. That was genuinely insane. Maybe I was slightly too passionate in the Saka members supporting the Stars, but hey, it's a core memory. Look, if I can take that as a compromise, I'll have New Year's Eve. You have, how's that, bragging rights? How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds perfectly fine by me. Perfectly Brilliant. Fine. We'll go with that. But yeah, just amazing to see, like you said, just the Women's Premier League, just get the amount of crowd it did was insane. The amount of people supporting it was just absolutely mental. And yeah, I think it's just that next step for cricket that we really needed, hasn't it? It's been talks for ages about this happening, and it's finally happened, and it's just been incredible. But yeah, the final itself, Mumbai Indians won by 7 wickets with 3 balls left. Delhi Capitals batting first, scoring 131 for 9. It's not really, like you said, not really a huge grand final score you want to see. But in saying that, it's been done before with the strikers have been able to sort of defend a lower total. But yeah, Delhi Capitals were unable to do so. Izzy Wong also took the first ever WPL hat-trick. Not in this match against the UP Warriors, she took it. But I think that's also a really key moment of the WPL. The first hat-trick went to someone like Izzy Wong, which was incredible to see. But yeah, I think definitely the best team won on the night in the Mumbai Indians.
I think the one thing that we haven't mentioned in this episode so far is we saw how good the first season of the 100 was and how it's developed from there. This is the first season of the WPL, and it's already been crazy with the amount of support it gets. Imagine in 5, 10 years how good it's going to be, because you'd have to think it's only got to grow from here, right?
Surely. It. I don't know how it wouldn't. If this is what they've managed to pull off for the first season, surely things are only going to improve and get better. So, yeah, I don't see it like... But this is one of the things. It's like, at the moment, what can they do to make it better? You know, because it's done pretty damn well.
Well, but yeah, like... The first thing I think of, obviously, I can't do it too short term, but long term, you'd be thinking more teams.
Expanding, yeah.
Different areas of India. Expand the competition so that more fans have got a team to support. You'd think that more of the men's IPL sides would get around it and put teams in after the start. And that's the only thing they could do, I think. There's maybe some more off-field stuff, or no more challenges or things like we see in the WBBL, but from what they have, and it was an uncertainty going in. Obviously, cricket in India is absolutely massive. So you figured before the tournament this was going to be a success, but I don't think any of us could have imagined it going this well. So it's brilliant. Indian cricket and Indian women's cricket as well is really a pioneer of how to look at things, especially from a fan's point of view and fans going to games, I think. Obviously, it's Australia in terms of on-field stuff, but it's just awesome to see. For all cricket fans worldwide, it's something you look at and go, this has been incredible. Now let's continue it with the 100 that's coming up. Hopefully the Women's Big Bash sees this and implements some things as well for next summer. It's looking good.
Yeah, it is. And I think both of us are going to be super excited to see what they can manage to pull off next year. And I think everybody's looking forward to seeing what they can pull off next year. But you mentioned the 100 in there. And swiftly transferring over to the 100, there has recently been the 100 draft. On Thursday, it took place. Obviously, we would not have been awake for it because it was, I think, probably like 4 a.m. or something like that.
Well, you might have been given your sleep schedule. Did you watch the WPL final?
I did. I had to watch a repeat because I could not stay up for it.
I was going to say, because I thought for a split second you were up watching that.
No.
And then that could have been up for this, but no, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it was the inaugural women's draft. Obviously, the men have had a draft before, but this was the first time the women had a draft. And it was super, super interesting, to say the least. I think the first 8 women's picks were the most surprising and shocked everyone, I think, in one in particular, I think, was pretty mind-blowing. And that was Kate Cross moving to the Northern Superchargers. After spending 2 years at the Originals, she's from Lancashire, moving to rival territory. It's still got no words for it, really. Ollie, you're from there. You've grown up in the virtually same place as her. So what do you make of it?
Look, Lancashire to Yorkshire, if it was the old county system, the way that the Women's County Championship used to be run, this would never happen. This would absolutely never happen. Now, obviously, we've had a bit of a joke. We threw out the Adam Driver, Star Wars, Kylo Ren traitor thing. Look, it's nothing bad on Kate Cross. Obviously, she's got to go play cricket. She's not the young player she once was. She's got to make the most out of her career. You can't begrudge that. From an Originals point of view, as I'm a fan of the Originals, it's sad that I won't get to see her play for my team, but she's got to do what she's got to do. And if she's getting better offers elsewhere, then you can't really begrudge her of that. But it is sad. Obviously, she's Lancastrian. She's Lancashire through and through. We're not going to knock her. We're not going to remove her from that status just because she's moved to a team based in Yorkshire. I'd hope that Lancashire fans around the world are saying the same. I hope that we're not all drawing a line through Kate Cross's name because she's moved to a team across the Pennines in a short form competition, but that's the way I see it.
Well, you mentioned there about losing one player, but you've gained another incredible one in Laura Wolfart. She's moved to the Manchester Originals, and what a player you have now got on your side. I can say firsthand from a striker's perspective, what a pickup that is. Super lucky to have Laura Wolfart on your side. Incredible cover drive queen. You should be absolutely buzzing that you've now got Laura Wolfart in your corner.
Well, if you look at it, Adelaide Strikers win the WBBL with Laura Wolfart. Manchester Originals win the 100 with Laura Wolfart. That'd be nice. Look, obviously it's not down to one player. There's going to be a lot of players that are going to contribute to any team winning the competition. But if you look at the Originals from a biased point of view, the players that we've got, it's looking all right. Laura Wolfart, Sophie Eccleston, you'd expect, given that she'd be a local player. Amanda J. Wellington, DeAndre Darton, a couple more overseas players as well. Obviously another striker in there, or two more strikers, I should say, in Wellington and Darton, who've had the experience. Emma Lamb, Katie George, Catherine Bryce, Ellie Threlkeld. There's some quality there. There's some definite quality there. So hopefully from my point of view, things happen. Obviously, if you go across the Pennines and go to the Superchargers, Kate Cross, it still hurts. Kate Cross, obviously, both of the Nobles crew have now left, which is another sad point. But you've got Kate Cross, you've got Alyssa Healy, Georgia Wareham, Heather Graham, ADR, Lindsay Smith, Holly Armitage and Bess Heath over there. So that's good for them, obviously. And if you have a look at it from our point of view as a podcast, we've got a few podcast guests as well who got picked up. If you look at the Welsh Fire, they've got Alex Hartley again. So they've retained her for this season. We look across Sophie Lough, of course, which this episode is very fitting. She's with the London Spirit. We've had Kate Cross, who we've talked about.
Sophie Devine, Phoenix. She
Sophie
was in
Devine
the top
for
bracket.
The Phoenix as I move across.
Hannah Baker from Phoenix as well.
Maitland Brown, of course, who celeb rock star vibes still exist, always will. And yeah, I think that's it. Unless I've missed somebody, apologies if I have. We've got a fair few, which is good. Like, this is it's good to see podcast guests do well, and all the podcast guests that we've interviewed have been lovely, lovely people. So we can't complain to see those players get picked up, and hopefully they do well for their side. But in saying all that, up the Originals.
It's the Originals have really just said, let's try and sign as many strikers as we can and see if we can get another but get a premiership. I think that's what they're saying, aren't they? Three strikers in their lineup. It's you got some pretty good odds, haven't you? But yeah, to kind of run through where we're at, the first draft picks for each team, Sophia Dunkley moving to the Welsh Fire, which was another one that was kind of like, you know, Welsh Fire just need to pick up as many people as they can. Sophie Devine back with the Phoenix. Grace Harris has gone for the top spot in the London Spirit. Harmanpreet Kaur has gone to the Trent Rockets. Danny Wyatt is back to the Southern Brave, and Susie Bates is back to the Oval Invincibles. So running through Welsh Fire, we've had Sophia Dunkley, Shabnam Ismail, Tammy Beaumont, Hayley Matthews, Georgia Elwis, Freya Davies, Laura Harris, and Alex Hartley, which again is looking really, it's actually looking quite good, isn't it? They needed a change. They've won, one game. So they definitely need a change, and it's looking all right so far. London Spirit is Grace Harris, Heather Knight, Sarah Glenn, Amelia Kerr, Sophie Munro, Charlie Dean, Sophie Luff, and Danny Gibson. Been through the Manchester Originals already. Superchargers as well. Birmingham Phoenix is Sophie Devine, Amy Jones, Elise Perry, Izzy Wong, Hannah Baker, Eve Jones, Katie Levick, and Emily Arlett. Trent Rockets is Harmanpreet Kaur, Nat Siverbrunt, Catherine Siverbrunt, Alana King, Lizelle Lee, Bryony Smith, Kirsty Gordon, and Grace Potts. Southern Brave have Danny Wyatt, Smriti Mandana, Anya Shrubsole, Chloe Tryon, Maitland Brown, Lauren Bell, Maya Boucher, Freya Kemp. And the Oval Invincibles have Susie Bates, Marizanne Kapp, Alice Capsey, Lauren Winfield-Hill, Danae van Nierkerk, Tash Farrant, Maddie Villiers, and Paige Schofield. Really, really pleased for Maitland. Super excited for her. Just so great to see another Australian who's probably not one of those, you know, like, well, doesn't play for Australia at the moment. So really good to see her go over. I think it's definitely a Charlotte Edwards connection there. She would have been impressed with her and how she performed over in the Big Bash. And being the coach of the Southern Brave, she's like, right, we're taking Maitland, which I love. Oval Invincibles are looking relatively similar from last year. And obviously, they're going to try and just look to retain as many players as they can to go back to back. The only change so far is the fact that they don't have Shabnam Ismail. But like I said, they've kept Susie, Capsy. Like, they've kept all of those. Well, in fact, I said back to back. They'll be going back to back to back if they win this year. So yeah, it's looking pretty even, I'd say. And that's the whole point of the draft, isn't it? To even out and get some players out of the Brave and the Invincibles. But yeah, I'm liking the look of how these teams are shaping up, and there's still some players that I hope to see place from 9 to 15 in the rest of the squads. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Do you want to run through the men's draft?
Yeah, we're not going to run through every player because there is a lot of players. There's more for the men's than the women's. We'll run through the first overall picks for each team. Johnny Bairstow is at the Welsh Fire. Joffre Archer with the Southern Brave. Stokes are the Superchargers. Sam Curran, obviously, player of the T20 World Cup, most recent one in Australia. He's with the Invincibles. Chris Wokes at the Phoenix. Makes sense. Mark Wood at the Spirit. Josh Butler, of course, with the Originals. And Joe Root with the Trent Rockets. So they're the first overall picks for each team. And from an Originals point of view, there's a fair few players in there that could well win us matches. Josh Butler, we've got Hasse Ranger in there, Phil Salt, Jamie Overton, I'm a massive fan of. And Josh Little is one of the more interesting overseas picks. Obviously, plays for Ireland. I was quite impressed with him, especially against... Go again?
He played in the 100 last year for the Originals, so he's back with them.
But it's still... Of course, yeah, he's retained, but it's one of those interesting ones where it's like, how often do you see players from Ireland go and absolutely boss it? It's not often you see a player from Ireland be used in those overseas slots.
No,
So that's the thing for me. Obviously, he's a great bowler and happy to have him on the team. And we had him last year, of course, as well. But yeah, can't complain there. If we, it's very, very early, Lily. But while we can, have we got any early predictions from a men and women's point of view for the 100?
I think for the men, it's going to be really different, isn't it? Because last year, none of the English players who play England Test cricket played because they were having a series against South Africa, I believe. But now, because there's no cricket, international cricket on for the men during the 100, surely that means they're all going to play in the 100, right? So that is big. And I think that's going to be a complete game changer. And from season one to season three, them not playing season two, I think it's going to be entirely different. So to say I'd have any predictions, I wouldn't, because I just don't know what to expect. Seeing all these names like Ben Stokes, Joe Root, like, it's going to be so exciting to see them in the 100. And I know a lot of people don't agree, but I am absolutely buzzing for it. I think it's what you need. You need these big names in tournaments like this. The men didn't have it last year, but the women didn't. So yeah, super exciting to see what happens in the men's 100. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, it should be good. Obviously, most of the players on that top line will play in the 100, because obviously all will play for England as well, you would think. Hence why they were ruled out last year. I want to say the originals. I'm not going to. I do like the look of the Oval Invincibles and the men. Obviously, they've had a great run in the women's as well. But I don't mind the way they look. As much as I'm a Lancashire fan, the Superchargers have got some quality right the way down as well. I wouldn't be surprised if they make a run. But it's going to be a good tournament. It's looking very even, as you say. Bring it on.
Yeah. I think like we said, it's super exciting. Cannot wait to see what happens. And I'll be over there. I'll be over there watching. So super, super keen to see what happens with the 100 this year. And you'll be over here watching. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, should we move on to our interview?
Yes, we shall.
So like we mentioned earlier, this week we spoke to Sophie Lough. Well, I spoke to Sophie Lough. Ollie wasn't around for this interview, unfortunately. But Sophie chatted to me all about the 100, all about her time in Australia. She recently spent some time with the New South Wales Breakers in the WNCL and played for Parramatta in their district cricket. She speaks to me all about her time in Australia and what she's learned and taking back to the Western Storm for the Rachel Hayer-Flint Trophy and the Charlotte Edwards Cup in the English upcoming summer. So yeah, it was wonderful to chat to Sophie all about the kind of comparisons between Australia and English cricket, and from someone who's obviously played top level at both. Yeah, it was really interesting to hear. So hopefully you will enjoy the interview with Sophie Lough. Thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. It's a very, very good of you to jump on and have a chat. How have you been? I know you've just returned from Australia. So yeah, how's it been settling back at home?
Yeah, I've had about a week back at home now. So yeah, it's been lovely to see everyone, obviously. Yeah, it's a bit quieter, a bit slower paced here. The weather's a little bit colder, shall we say, from the 30 degrees that I was having in Sydney. So yeah, it's been a bit of a come down, but yeah, just nice to be back, and hopefully be back in with Western Storm this week, so that'll be good.
Yeah, it's one cricket to another, really, isn't it? You don't seem to have stopped.
No, it's been pretty full on, to be honest. When I look back to sort of the end of the English summer, I guess I had a little bit of time off before I flew to Australia. I was pretty clear that I wanted a little bit of a break rather than just rolling into their season. So, I didn't get out there till the end of October, which gave me a month or so off. Only got a week off now, and then back into sort of training and pre-season and yeah, meant to be playing friendly games in 2 weeks' time, but the weather definitely needs to improve before then.
Yeah, I saw that was it snowing quite recently, or like a couple of weeks ago or something? I think there might have been snow. Did you catch that, or did you return after that happened?
No, thankfully I returned after. I did get a few photos with my parents, and I was like, oh God, I hope that's gone by the time I get home. That was the week before I was due to fly back. By the time I got back, it was okay.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, that's good. You made the most of the sun over here then. But I guess to get going, do you mind just telling me where in the world you are at the moment and what teams you're associated with at this point in time?
Yeah, so I'm currently based in Somerset, which is definitely one of my teams. It was the first team I started playing for when I was growing up, representative cricket. So it's always been my county. And then I'm captain of Western Storm, which is the, I guess, new domestic team that is associated with the Southwest in the UK, which sort of covers the whole of the Southwest and Wales as well. So we're a massive region. And then I've played recently for Welsh Fire and London Spirit in the 100. And we've got a draft next week. So we'll see if I end up anywhere. And yeah, potentially could be on my third team in 3 years.
Super exciting, isn't it? Very exciting times, especially for women's cricket introducing this year. But we'll talk a little bit about the 100 in a moment. But to start it all off, like we just said, you returned from Australia. So how was your Australian experience? You played in the WNCL for New South Wales. So can you chat to me a little bit about your time down under? How did this all come about for you initially?
Yeah, well, firstly, it was an amazing experience. And I'm probably at the top end of my career. I'm hopefully nowhere near retiring, but I'm definitely I guess of an older age to go out to Australia. It was my first time to Australia, age 28 29. I turned 29 while I was over there, but it was an awesome experience. I basically got linked up with Parramatta, who are a club in Sydney. I had a couple of contacts out there, mainly Trevor Griffin, who has worked with Sydney Thunder over the last few years in the Women's Big Bash. And he was very keen for me to go over. He's currently the head coach of Western Storm, and I've known him for a very long time. And he just said to me, "Luffy, I think it'd be a great opportunity for you to go over and have a winter over there, meet new people, play against different teams, and just take yourself out of your comfort zone," which is what I did. So the plan was to just go and play for Parramatta, play grade cricket and in that comp. And Trevor obviously had links with Leah Poulton and Gavin Twining at the New South Wales Breakers. So the plan was to just link up with them from a training perspective, which is what I did early December when they finished the Women's Big Bash. I went and trained with them. And at that time, they had a lot of injuries, and they also had a few girls sort of get representative honours for Australia, Phoebe Litchfield being one of those. So they were looking for a couple of players and looking for a top order bat. And yeah, I guess I was in the right place at the right time, and ended up making my debut at Blundstone Arena in Tassie against Tasmania, which was pretty cool, to be honest. Wasn't the plan at all. So I guess the Breakers experience for me was a little bit of a bonus. And yeah, it tested me. It was a great challenge playing against some of the best players in the world. And yeah, a great experience playing alongside some brilliant players at the Breakers as well.
That's pretty crazy, isn't it? Going over there just to sort of play district cricket, and then you end up playing WNCL cricket, which is a pretty big deal over here. So to go over and that not be your plan, did you kind of have to, like, how did you go about preparing differently to play WNCL, which, like I said, is quite a big deal to represent New South Wales? Well, did you feel any, I mean, you've been playing cricket for quite some time now, so you're probably used to handling nerves, but was there anything there that you were kind of like, right, okay, how am I going to go about playing for New South Wales here?
I definitely felt the pressure a bit, and I guess a lot of the pressure you feel is from yourself all of the time. And you know, Gav, the head coach, was great. He didn't put too much pressure on me at all. He just wanted me to go out there and, I guess, enjoy the experience. And the girls were great as well. They loved having me around, and I loved being in that environment. I wouldn't say I changed too much of what I did. I was actually coming into their games, I think it was just before Christmas, we went to Tasmania to play. And I was coming in off the back of 100 at grade cricket. Again, sort of right place, right time. There was a New South Wales Breakers selector at that game, which I had no idea about. So she watched me score 100. And then I got 90 in a trial game for the Breakers. And that I think that pretty much secured my place at the top of the order for them when we went to Tassie. And yeah, I probably wasn't as successful as what I wanted to be with the bat for the Breakers. I'll probably just put too much pressure on myself in those games. And struggled to contribute, which was a shame, really, because as someone that's, you know, like you said, had quite a long career in the game and always prides themselves on getting big runs, it was a shame that I couldn't show what I was capable of.
Well, I think regardless, it was super exciting to see you come over. And obviously, I've watched lots of the England cricket sort of set up, and to see, you know, international names come over. And obviously, I think Kirsty Gordon was training a bit with the Sixers and with New South Wales as well. But to see you get a game, I think was super exciting. So it was brilliant to be able to see you live and play down here. But do you have any kind of highlights from playing in Australia? Anything that you kind of like? Yeah, that was a pretty key moment in my career.
I think the 100 that I got at grade cricket was pretty special. It was actually a really tough week for me. I'd been away from home for about a month, and I just lost my granddad as well. So it was a pretty tough time, and I was very clear that I still wanted to stay out in Sydney and make the most of my opportunity out there, and as were my family back home. They were fully supportive of that decision. So yeah, to get 100 that week was pretty special. And I guess when you go overseas, you are sort of like the overseas pro. So people are expecting sort of big things from you. That's why they've got you over there. But I think for me, it was more than just the weight of runs that I scored. I think the way that I held myself in those environments and had an influence on younger players, you know, particularly at Parramatta, it's a very young group. So I had 10 years on a lot of the girls in their first grade team, which is amazing because they're going to build for the future, and hopefully if they can keep that group together, then they'll be very successful in a few years' time. And similarly at the Breakers as well, without their experienced Aussies in that squad, apart from sort of Sammy Jo at the top end of her career as well, they are a very young core group. So yeah, hopefully I added a bit of experience, and yeah, just being around that group and the environment, working with different coaches, it enthused me again. Not that I lost my love of the game, but certainly when you work with new people, when you're in and around training with different people, it keeps things fresh and exciting. And I certainly felt that over my course of time in Australia.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. And I'm glad that Australia managed to provide some sort of extra boost in a way to keep you going, which is really good to hear. But we'll talk a little bit more about the Australian and kind of the comparison between that and England in a moment. But to go right back to the very beginning, how did you first get into cricket, and what was your pathway in order to get to where you are now?
Probably similar to a lot of girls my age, especially in the UK. I would have thought it was pretty similar anywhere in the world. But yeah, my dad played cricket, and I've got a younger brother. So every weekend was spent, especially in the summer, was spent at the local cricket club watching my dad play, and obviously having Jack there to pick up a bat and a ball with, play in the garden with. Yeah, I guess that's where it sort of started. And then when I got into school and I was playing with a lot of boys, I joined a local club as well, and it just sort of took off from there, really. But I was always surrounded by boys growing up. Captained a lot of boys teams, absolutely loved it. My first actual experience of playing in a like all girls team was actually at county level for Somerset, so that was a little bit strange. Actually, it wasn't the norm for me. And then yeah, just progressed through the Somerset age group pathway. I think I made my senior women's debut for Somerset at 15, which seems like a awful long time ago. And I mean, since then the game has developed massively, and yeah, it's actually crazy to think that I'm sat here as a professional cricketer, because you have all those aspirations and dreams when you are that 13-year-old girl and you've just got picked for your county, but it wasn't an option back then. So to think of the opportunities that all of these young girls have got ahead of them now, if they do want to, you know, have a career in cricket, then I guess the world's their oyster.
Yeah, for sure. And I've spoken to quite a few, you know, English players who have come over and also played in Australia, vice versa, Australians who have gone over to play over there. And I think there's been quite a difference in the way that Australian female cricket has kind of developed to England women's cricket. And I think obviously the 100 has been a huge part of that progression as well in the most recent years. But like you said, for you being involved in the county and the regional setup for quite some time, for you to personally kind of watch that development, and you help nurture all these younger players by being involved in your county, how do you think this has developed in a way, and what's it been like to watch the development of female cricket through your involvement?
Well, it's pretty cool to be, I guess, part of the journey. Yeah, don't get me wrong, there are times where I look at these 18, 19 year olds that come into our professional environments for the first time, and you know, they can have a career in the game for the next 15 years, and you know, at 29 I don't have that time as a professional, realistically. So I am slightly envious of the girls and the opportunities that they're getting these days. But actually, at the same time, I'm very proud to have been part of the journey of professionalism. And if I can influence and encourage these young girls and, I guess, be a role model for them, be a sounding board, that older, that more experienced head in the dressing room, so that Western Storm, if and when I retire, you know, is in a really good place, and I've had an influence over that. I guess that's what I'm looking to do at the minute. I obviously want to be as successful as I can personally, but ultimately I'm very invested in the domestic team here, which is Western Storm, and it always has been for me. I'm very proud to represent the region that I come from, and yeah, hopefully we've got a few trophies left in us before I do maybe hang up my boots. But yeah, definitely paving the way for those younger girls to come through. It's hugely exciting. And like you say, around the tournaments like the 100, it's just, well, it's accelerated it beyond my imagination. I think some of us were a little bit skeptical of the 100 and the impact it would have on the game. But in terms of the women's game, it's just blown it out. Yeah, blown it out of like proportion. It's gone through the roof. And I think particularly the Aussies and the Women's Big Bash might be looking at the 100 and seeing what we're doing and what's working there as to how they can, again, try and improve that competition again. So I guess all of the time you're looking to improve these franchise competitions. And yeah, we've just seen the WPL, haven't we? Again, blow everything, or like it's off the scale, the amount of money that players were going for, and it's obviously producing some really good cricket out there as well, which is hugely exciting.
Yeah, and obviously I cannot wait to talk about the 100 with you, but before we get there, you know, you talk about paving the way and you know, building the path in order for these younger players to just be able to sort of walk through it. What would you say is the next step, if you kind of have any sort of idea from where you've been involved, but what would you think is the next step to further the progression of female cricket in the UK to take it to that next level?
Definitely more contracts. When I received my professional contract, there were only 5 of us contracted. And you obviously need 11 players on the pitch, and you probably need a squad of 15 to get through a whole summer of cricket. So yeah, definitely more contracts. That's grown each year. So more investment, more funding has gone in year on year to increase the number of contracts. And we're currently up at 10 in most regions. Some regions may have a little bit more cash to play with from other areas and have maybe got a few more than 10, which is brilliant. But yeah, in the next couple of years, we need to have fully contracted squads, so that, you know, everyone in the squad can dedicate their time and energy to just being a cricketer. I think that's where there's been challenges over the years with, you know, some of our girls are still either in education or they're working, and trying to balance that alongside their cricket is really tough. And then for us that are in the environment all of the time, we're, you know, asking those girls to live and breathe our values and our standards and the way that we want to do things. But you've also got to appreciate that they may have just come from work, or, you know, they've just spent all week at work and they're giving up their Saturday to come and train because they want to pursue that cricket career. So yeah, there's definitely been challenges in that respect. And then I guess, as well as just the playing group becoming more professional, the more staff, and there's definitely more funding going into that area as well, getting the best coaches, the best science and medicine team. And I think we'll see that start to grow as well. More support in terms of psychologists, nutritionists, all of those, I guess, sort of additional roles. I think the domestic teams will gain them as well.
It's a super interesting point you bring up about the contracts as well, I think, because does it sort of throw off the way that your team kind of builds together? If some of you are, like you said, just doing this all the time, and some of them are, yeah, like working. You said, like, how do you build that kind of team dynamic where you can work together, but some people just aren't able to maintain such a full cricket sort of schedule? Does that kind of break up the team in a way where you're like, some of you are doing this and other people are having to do something else?
I think it definitely has its challenges. And I think COVID initially, when we were becoming professionals, the first five of us, you know, COVID was still a thing as well. So, you know, we were training like remotely, and we were training in ones and twos as opposed to like a whole squad. I don't think we actually trained as a whole squad in 2021, it would have been, until, you know, right before the season, because restrictions didn't allow us to. So there's definitely been challenges, but yeah, I think we've tried to make a conscious effort at Western Storm around the social side of things, to make sure that we're spending as much time together off the pitch, as well as at training and at games. And I think that will become evident this summer, because there's double the amount of games in the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy. We're going to be on the road a lot more and playing a lot more cricket, so naturally you do spend a lot more time in each other's pockets, and I think we'll become a closer unit because of that, and hopefully that will stand us in good stead.
Yeah, no, 100%, and hopefully, like you said, we can see more professionalism, I think, is definitely what everybody sort of wants. But now that you've played state cricket for New South Wales, and, you know, the equivalent in England, what are some differences that you've maybe found between the two countries that either England could sort of learn from Australia, or maybe Australia could learn from the England setup?
I think in terms of the standard of cricket, I don't think we're that far behind. I think there's a lot of maybe media hype, and has been over the last few years, around, you know, Australia are, you know, so much better than England, and results would suggest that at the minute. You know, Australia look unbeatable at World Cups, and I think this summer we'll be really interested in the Ashes as well, to see, you know, who fares better in that contest. There's obviously an England A Oz A tour going to be happening alongside that as well, so again that will be interesting to see where sort of the emerging players in both countries match up. But I think our domestic professional structure over the last couple of years has definitely naturally improved the standard, because we're getting more time on task, more access to good coaching, and we're being put in the pressure cooker more often than not. You look at the 100 and you look at how many people these young girls are playing in front of week in, week out, and yeah, that's going to stand you in good stead if you do go on to, you know, further honours with England or whatever that may be, playing franchise cricket around the world. So I think standard wise it's pretty similar. I think we're still, you know, we're still trying to catch you a little bit, but yeah, I thought it was actually pretty even. I think the biggest thing for me, and Cricket New South Wales are very lucky, and they've just had Cricket Central built, which is an unbelievable facility. If you ever get the chance to go to Sydney and see it, I would recommend going. It's blown my mind, to be honest. It's a purpose-built cricket facility. I think there's about 20 indoor nets, gym, physio rooms, recovery rooms, you name it, they've got it. And just before I flew home, they just laid the turf for 40 outdoor wickets as well, which, yeah, it's just, the facility there is mind-blowing. We obviously don't have anything like that on that scale here in the UK. And we're currently, a lot of our regional teams are currently sharing facilities with first-class counties. So we'd be training out of Taunton, Glamorgan, which is in Cardiff, and Bristol. And we've got to share those facilities with Somerset, Gloucestershire and Glamorgan. And I think a lot of other teams would be sharing their facilities as well. So just that access to facilities, yeah, Cricket Central blew my mind. So I was hoping I could just pick it up and pop it on the plane with me and bring it home. But yeah, you guys have definitely got that facility side of things sorted. I think I played at Junction Oval against Victoria, and it seemed a sort of similar setup there in terms of everything being available to them there and then, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that the New South Wales new build was huge, and I was expecting it to be big, but by the sounds of it, that is kind of exceeded everyone's sort of expectations. That sounds pretty mental. But yeah, now to talk a bit more about the Western Storm. Now, obviously, you mentioned that you've been captain of Western Storm. Now, what's it kind of like to just represent where you've grown up? That must be quite an honour to have lived and grown up in. Now you're representing that county. What's that like for you in that region?
Yeah, it makes me immensely proud, and coming through all of the pathways and then playing for Western Storm initially in the days of the KSL, which again seemed like a very long time ago, and it was just a pop-up tournament for a month and everyone was semi-pro, gave up pretty much their working life to go and play cricket for a month, which was really cool at the time, and we were a very successful team. We won that twice. So I have great memories from those days, and I guess things have not changed drastically since we've become professional in the new domestic structure, but I certainly feel that there's a more even keel amongst the teams. Obviously Vipers are pretty strong and always have been since those KSL days, but yeah, I'm very proud to represent Western Storm, honoured when I got offered the captaincy, and yeah, hopefully I can, help inspire the team to win a couple of trophies in the next couple of years. That would be brilliant. I think we've got a really young core group of players, so they keep me on their on my toes. But that excites me. I quite like being around that younger group. From a fitness perspective, I'm always trying to keep up with them and sort of exceed them, so that they're always chasing the old girl, I like to think. I don't know how they feel about that, but yeah, I think it's an exciting time. We've obviously got Trevor Griffin, who's came back in the middle of last season, so yeah, excited to link up with him again. I've worked a lot with Trev over the years, and I guess him coming in the middle of the season last year, we were sort of already up and running, so things just sort of happened and carried on. He didn't want to change too much, but obviously excited to work with him, sort of a fresh new season, a lot more cricket to play, and see what we can do.
That's super exciting. But you mentioned there about it being quite a younger group of players. Now, for those who are listening, now, who are some maybe impressive up-and-coming players from the Western Storm squad that you would recommend people keep their eye out for and watch this upcoming season?
Well, we had two girls at the Under-19 World Cup. Again, fantastic opportunity for the young girls in our region, across the country and across the world to play in that competition. It was fantastic. So we've got two girls, Sophia Smale, left-arm spinner. Anyone that watched 100 would have seen her play for Oval Invincibles. And Neve Holland as well, all-rounder. I think she batted at three most games for England in the World Cup. But definitely those two, I think they were making their way in the game last year. Soph obviously sort of exceeded expectations and went really well in the 100 as well. But those two, I think, will play a more prominent role for Storm this year. And that's really exciting for them and for me, to be able to captain two young girls that have got a lot of talent. And I think learning the game from a sort of game awareness, tactical point of view as well, hopefully I can have a little bit of an influence on that. But yeah, I'll certainly be hoping that those two go well this year. And then Danny Gibson, probably a name that's been around for a while, to be honest, but she's still only 21, believe it or not. Has played for London Spirit in the 100 for the last couple of years. And I think in the first year was striking at over 200 in most games. So got a bit of a good reputation for that. And she's going to be one of our senior players at 21, leading the bowling attack. Very destructive with the bat. I watch her in the nets, and I haven't seen many girls hit the ball as hard as Gibbo. When it's her day, hopefully she makes it count and can get some big runs. And I've no doubt if she gets big runs, she'll be scoring them pretty quickly as well. So yeah, that's exciting.
Well, there we go. Heard it here first. They're the three to keep an eye out for this upcoming season. But to chat a bit about the 100 you mentioned there, and we've mentioned before, in little bits and bobs. Now, you've obviously been involved in both year one and year two, both for the Welsh Fire and the London Spirit. Quite a big swap there between teams. But what's it been like? What's been your experience in both years of the 100? Just chat to me all about it.
Well, crazy is probably the word that springs to mind, because it has been crazy. It's surpassed my expectations, and I think it surpassed a lot of people's expectations. I remember the first game in 2021 for Welsh Fire. We were playing up at Headingley in Leeds against Northern Superchargers, and I can't remember the scores exactly. We batted first. We probably got about 120, and then we had them something stupid like 13 for four, and then we got outclassed by a Jemima Rodrigues masterclass. She hit 90 off not many balls, and I was captain at the time, and wherever I put the field, she just hit it to where the fielders weren't. It was pretty cool to watch, but I just remember thinking, I think we were about 20 balls from finishing, and the atmosphere was unbelievable, like nothing I'd ever experienced before. And I just remember thinking, oh, this is really cool. Like, we were getting pumped, and I was going to be the losing captain, and I was thinking, this is really cool. Like, we're playing in front of thousands of people. I've never felt this atmosphere before. And it just grew from there, really, game on game. There was just so many people watching. The atmosphere was brilliant. And yeah, in the second year, I obviously made the move to London Spirit, playing at Lord's again, like nothing I've ever experienced before. That's just a cool experience in itself, to be honest, to be at Lord's and that be your home ground, and you just turn up to Lord's for training on a daily basis. I could get used to that. I could get used to the food there as well. It's pretty good. And yeah, it just went off, really. I've obviously been involved in two teams that haven't been as successful as I'd have wanted to. You know, haven't been involved in any eliminators or finals. But just the competition as a whole has been like really good fun. That's how I would describe it. For a month of the season, you go and play for a different team, you're in a different environment with different people, different coaches, and it's just a heap of fun.
That's incredible. It looks like it, honestly. It gives you kind of like goosebumps just watching the games and everything. It's pretty incredible. But you said going into it, you know, you didn't really have any idea what to expect. So regarding sort of setting scores, how long did it kind of take for you, maybe, like, you know, as a group to work out, right, what's a good score here, a defendable score to kind of set, you know, that sort of stuff, tactical about the game? How did you go about working that out? Because it's 100 balls, it's not a T20, so you've got to kind of change it there. So yeah, how did you and the team kind of go about setting all this tactical stuff up?
I think it probably took the whole of the first year, really, to start to figure out, you know, what was a good score and how we wanted to go about it. I think naturally it's 20 balls shorter than a T20, so everyone was like, well, we've just got to go harder at the top, like, you got to make the most of the power play, which completely agree with. But I think there's a balance to that as well, because you want to set the game up for the back end as well. So if you go too hard up top, then I think, you know, you'd probably have seen some teams were maybe only getting like just over 100, because they potentially went too hard up at the top. So yeah, it was just trying to, I guess, assess conditions as quickly as possible. And I think the key from a batting perspective is if someone gets in, they've really got to cash in. So the first game of the 2022 season, for London Spirit, we were playing at the Aegeus Bowl against Southern Brave, and Beth Mooney got 97. And when someone's in, they can just take the game away from that opposition team, because it's a shorter format as well. That momentum just carries you through. And then if you've got people that can just bat around that, then that definitely helps. And then from a bowling perspective, I think the first year, in terms of the captaincy, I think it helped my captaincy. I was a lot more instinctive, and I didn't question as much. I think you don't have the time to do that, so I just went on gut instinct. We did a lot of analysis before around matchups. So when certain people came out to bat, it was like, right, well, the matchup here is like, you know, get leg spin on. So immediately, like, you get your leg spinner on. and just things like that. And it almost simplified the game for me, even though everything was happening at 100 miles an hour. It simplified my decision making as a captain, and that's been something that I've been able to take back to Western Storm, which is good.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you kind of mentioned there about not really figuring out in the first kind of season. And I think the second season, it's all just quite unpredictable, isn't it? You never quite know how the game's going to go. Now, I remember I travelled over and watched a couple of games, and I saw the game at Lords where it was Spirit versus Phoenix. Now, that game, I can't exactly remember the exact score, but it was only like 70-80-odd, wasn't it? And then you almost didn't quite get it, which was like quite mind-blowing. So, well, you did in the end, but you almost didn't chase down something like 80. So how did that happen? Like, how did you guys work through that, and how did you manage to kind of chase that one down in the end?
Yeah, I think pressure does crazy things. I mean, Phoenix, throughout the whole competition, looked like they were going to qualify for the Eliminator finals. And losing that game meant that they didn't qualify. We got momentum with the ball. And, you know, when you get their big players out early, that definitely helps. You know, when you're getting Divine and Perry without really scoring, then you're definitely up and about. They sort of scraped to, 70, 80 odd, I think it was, like you say. And then with the bat, it's always one of those hard things when you're chasing a lower total. You know, do you go out there and you go, oh, well, actually, we've got a bit more time now. You know, how do we want to play this? Again, we lost wickets early. We were probably three down within the first 15 balls. We just struggled to wrestle momentum. And I think it was an amazing partnership between Naomi Dattani and Grace Griffins that got us over the line in the end. But yeah, it was a terrible watch, being on the sidelines, having not scored many yourself, and thinking, like, you know, we can't lose this surely, because we're only chasing 70, 80. That's what pressure does. And I guess that's the great thing about cricket sometimes is, yes, you want to see high scores and so many runs. But I think as a fan and a supporter in that game, yes, you wouldn't have been seeing boundaries every single ball, but the tension and the nerves and the atmosphere that you'd have felt in a different way would have been just as exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And I can 100% agree on that was like one of the most insane games of cricket I've probably ever seen. So I couldn't imagine what it would have been like sitting on the bench, you know, part of the team. The crowd was amazing, wasn't it? It was like, it was quite a small crowd, but the noise that was being made by this crowd was something I'd never sort of experienced before. It was it was definitely something else, and I think a memorable game that people are gonna have in their mind for quite some time. So I think the big thing, like you mentioned, the 100 just skyrocketed the England sort of cricket, didn't it? It put it like internationally, people are like, what is this? I was sitting in Australia, I'm like, what is this? Never seen anything like it before. So I guess for not only for cricket itself, but particularly for women's cricket in England, what do you think the 100 has kind of helped in a way? Is it something like playing with the double headers, where the people who generally just watch men's cricket then came along to watch the women? You know, is there anything like that you think has really progressed female cricket?
It's definitely given us a platform, and I think the double header structure has helped that, even though that was sort of a bit of a fluke and a bit of an accident because of COVID. So originally the men's and women's teams of each franchise were going to be playing at different grounds, different times, different days, I would presume. And then because of COVID, everything had to align to one central venue, which meant, you know, in that first year, and then it's continued into the second year, that a lot of the time the women are preceding the men, and the men will play after us. So you're getting people in to watch, I guess, a whole day's cricket, but it's pretty fast paced and it doesn't really take all day. The interval between the games is pretty short as well, from what I can remember, which definitely helps in terms of keeping people there. They'll probably just pop off, get some more drinks and some food, and then they're ready for the second game. That's definitely helped. And I think the fact that it was double headers meant that you're more closely aligned with the men's side as well, so it felt more one franchise. It's a good discussion point, and myself and Kirsty were recently on Hannah Darlington and Maitland Bryan's podcast discussing this, because they really feel that the WBBL has gone away from that model. And, you know, they're playing sort of random games in random places. You know, Sydney Thunder could be playing Hobart Hurricanes in Perth. And you think, well, who's going to watch that? But from what I hear, it's all about sort of like the TV figures and the viewing over there. But definitely the 100 is about getting bums on seats, people into the ground, and creating that sort of family atmosphere. And it's definitely felt that way the last couple of years. And hopefully this year it continues to grow again.
Yeah, that's definitely many conversations I've had on my podcast, let me tell you. Every person who's played in the 100 and the Big Bash, like Georgia Redmayne, Piper Cleary, everyone's had the same sort of opinion. And I think with the Australian, when it was doubleheaders in the Big Bash and the WBBL, it was a big gap in between games. Sometimes they were like 2 hours, and people aren't going to go for 2 hours in the middle and just sit and do what, wait, like it's not a thing. So I think that's definitely something that the 100 has nailed by accident, which is brilliant. But like you said, you could possibly go anywhere, and the draft's coming up very soon, so looking forward to season 3. Hoping that you're going to be involved. What are you most looking forward to about it?
Well, I just think experiencing that atmosphere again, playing in front of a lot of people. We sort of go from playing in front of maybe one man and his dog, a couple of parents, maybe a few fans in our domestic structure in the Rachel Hayhoe Flynn and the Charlotte Edwards Cup. And then you go to the 100, where it's marketed particularly well. They throw a lot of cash at the marketing and they get a lot of people into the grounds. So yeah, definitely looking forward to just playing in front of a lot of people again and experiencing that atmosphere. And who knows where I'll end up. I'd love to stay at London Spirit. I had a great time there last year. Really great bunch of girls, and it's a great place to train and play. But going into the draft, they want to sort of shake up the competition and try and shake up a bit of the talent all over the place, because they currently feel it's too one-sided. So they think that Oval and Southern Brave will continue to win and Welsh Fire will continue to lose, unfortunately, if they don't shake things up. So yeah, the fact that there is a draft is really exciting. And I think that in itself, even though it's only sort of a small fraction of how players are picked up for their teams in the 100, I think that shows where the women's game has gone, because it feels that it's in a position now where players can get drafted. We definitely weren't in that position 2 years ago. It just wouldn't have happened. So yeah, I think the draft is, even though I'm a little bit apprehensive and nervous about getting picked up and where I could end up, I think it's hugely exciting for the game.
Well, that's it. It must be, yeah, incredibly nervous. I'm nervous and I'm not even anywhere near it, but just like, you know, the possibility of being able to play with like a completely new group or possibly like a relatively similar group, that's something that I think is, yeah, super exciting. But I guess now looking forward just to this cricket season in general, is there anything that you're maybe, you said that you're looking forward to hopefully winning some titles with the Western Storm, but is there anything in particular that you're maybe aiming to achieve elsewhere this season, or is there anything in particular that you're looking to, that you're just looking forward to about the season?
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to getting back in with the girls this week. It's obviously been 5 months since I've seen a lot of them, and I've, you know, kept in contact via WhatsApp and social media. But yeah, just excited to get back with the group, really, and again sort of feel infused to be around Storm again and what we're about. And we've got sort of a pre-season 4-day camp coming up in 2 weeks time where the group will spend a lot more time together, and I've no doubt there that we'll sort of put pen to paper around sort of how we want to play this year and some of the aims that we've got going into the season. I think for me personally, like, it doesn't change what I want to do and what I want to achieve. Like, I pride myself on scoring big runs, and I know that will contribute to some wins for Western Storm if I can do that consistently. And I like to think over the years, you know, I've been pretty consistent in doing that and being able to contribute. And as captain, I'm desperate to lead from the front, and obviously scoring runs sort of does that. But yeah, I think just encouraging these young girls as well, while I'm out in the field with them, just around like giving them confidence and giving them ownership over, you know, what they're looking to achieve with the ball. And I think that was one thing I learned from being out in Australia as well is, you know, obviously didn't do any captaincy out there, which was a nice break. But I think you can pick up different things from different environments. And I always felt like the Breakers were sort of always looking to take the attacking option. And don't get me wrong, it didn't always work. But I quite like that mindset of, yeah, like we're going to, you know, set more attacking fields and we're going to do this and try and do that for a longer period of time in 50 over cricket. I think maybe in the past I've been quite conservative and like we're out of power play and, you know, I'll like watch your four out. And whereas now I'd be trying to encourage my bowlers to go with their plan A. And, you know, if that means two out, three out, then we go with that first and foremost and we can adapt from there. So yeah, just excited to get stuck into the season really. And I guess see how we shape up. The girls have had another winter under their belts, working really hard in the nets and on their fitness. And yeah, hopefully that stands us in good stead for a successful 2023.
Yeah, for sure. And there has been a few moves between the teams as well, hasn't there? So you know, a couple of people have left, a couple of people have come in. So and you sometimes, you know, it's going to be playing against some former teammates. So that must be, you know, quite an exciting prospect about this season. But I guess in general now, do you have any specific goals that you're maybe looking to achieve just in general with your cricket and the rest of your cricket career?
So last year I dipped my toe into commentary. So I worked for Somerset on their live stream, covering both sort of T20 and four-day championship cricket. So I'm doing the same this year, which with an increased playing schedule has made it hard to fit in as many dates as I'd want to do. But yeah, still doing a few games there. So I guess, yeah, as I'm getting a little bit older, just trying to see what else is out there. And I really enjoyed my commentary time last year. It was a great team to be a part of. And you get the best seat in the house. Like I love watching cricket. So yeah, to watch my home team as well, more often than not, play some really good cricket. That was pretty cool. So yeah, just balancing those two things. But yeah, just keep my feet to the ground in terms of trying to be the best player I can for Western Storm. And I think that's the other thing as well about Australia was I played a lot more cricket than I was expecting, and I think it's really important to be able to switch off and have other things going on outside of the game. So I do a fair bit of baking, which I'll be trying to keep up this year. I'm sure some of the Storm girls have missed having me around as much this winter, because usually in the winter I've got a lot more time on my hands as well, so I end up doing a lot more baking. Whether I'll do as much during the summer and the season, who knows with all my commitments. But yeah, just trying to keep life as balanced as possible and a bit of perspective.
I'm sure you won over a lot of the New South Wales girls when you met them with some of the things that you were managed to whip up there, I bet.
Yeah, there was a little road trip to Canberra, so they have a team nutritionist, and I remember saying something about me baking or something, like follow my page on Instagram, etc. And I just remember Sammy Jo turned to me and she said, "Oh, just so you know, Luffy, like the nutritionist isn't coming to Canberra." So yeah, that gave me full license to do a bit of baking for the road trip, which was cool.
Love that. You're just like, right, this is my time. This is my time. Brilliant. Now to a couple of easier questions. Do you have maybe a favourite cricket memory across any of your teams and any of your time playing?
Oh, I can't really look past the 2017 KSL title with Western Storm. I was out batting with Stefani Taylor at the end of the game. She whacked a six and we won. And I'll always remember it because it was the first time I'd experienced winning a competition like that before, like playing in front of what I thought was a decent crowd there at Hove, which was about 3,000 people. But that was the most that I'd played in front of at that time. So yeah, I was out there at the end. There was three of us out there because Staff had cramp and she needed a runner. So Fran Wilson was out there as well. So it was just the most bizarre sort of end to a game. And yeah, it was just my first memory of winning a big title, really.
That's wonderful. And do you have maybe a favorite teammate across, again, all the teams that you've played for?
Favorite teammate? Oh, people will be hoping that I say them. I'd probably say Amara Carr. So we played at London Spirit together last year. We'd previously played at Western Storm together, but we grew up playing county cricket against each other. So I played for Somerset, she played for Devon, which are neighbouring counties. So we'd play against each other all of the time. And I guess as you sort of worked your way up the pathway, and we probably spent a little bit of time together in some England underage stuff as well. And then, yeah, played together at Western Storm, and then was sort of reunited at London Spirit last year, which was really nice.
Yeah, well, so you ended up going from playing against her, and you're like, oh, okay, so she's not that bad. Maybe we can get along here. Brilliant. So now to kind of finish it off, we have some quick fire questions that we like to do. Some are cricket related, some are not cricket related. So the first one being T20 or one day cricket?
One day cricket.
Okay, good. Orange juice or apple juice?
Orange.
Good. Tyrrells or hula hoops?
Oh, Tyrrells.
Okay. Which flavour? You like original or do you like them?
Nah, I'd probably go like a salt and vinegar.
Yeah, okay, good, good. Now, if you were stuck on a desert island, you can take one person with you and two things. Who are you taking and what are you taking?
Who am I taking? Oh, I need someone resourceful. I tell you what, she's going to love me for saying this, but I'm actually going to take Annika Learoyd.
Okay.
Who I've just spent a lot of time with out in Sydney. Yeah, she studies wildlife, and I just think she'd be very resourceful. We did a couple of vacations away. She can start a fire. Just, yeah, things like that. I think, yeah. So I'd take her.
Mm-hmm.
And then things. Am I allowed to take a phone?
Yeah, you can, whatever
yeah,
you want. Yeah.
Because I'd want to keep in contact with home and tell them how horrendous it is. I just take some chocolate because I just can't live without chocolate.
Nice. Yeah, good, good. Honestly, Annika, what a good answer. I've chatted to her and she spoke all about her wildlife stuff. So she can tell you like what kind of animals that are dangerous and gonna kill you and which ones are friendly. So she's got it. She's the right person to have on your
terrible
side.
Terrible spiders though, so maybe I haven't picked up wisely. Yeah, but yeah,
right.
She'll be happy with that.
Yeah, good answer. Now, to win a game, hypothetically, you know, you're in a last over sort of situation, would you rather hit three sixes to win or take three catches to win a game?
Three sixes.
Okay, good. It's a bit of a power move, isn't it?
Yes.
Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite TV show or movie at all?
Not really a movie person. Yeah, just never really watched a lot of films. It was all sport on the TV. Love The Crown.
Okay.
So yeah, and that taught me quite a lot about the royal family, actually. So yeah, love The Crown. But yeah, just been watching a few sort of sporting documentaries on Netflix lately. So Full Swing, the golf one, Breakpoint, tennis. Yeah, I've enjoyed them. So yeah, probably don't sit down and watch a lot of stuff, and I don't binge anything either, which people probably find weird, but I'm just not a binger of TV series and films and that, so yeah.
That's completely fair enough. Completely fair enough. Now, pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes, 100%.
Good. That's the right answer. That is definitely the right answer. Do you have a favourite cuisine?
Yeah, I love an Indian. Yeah. So yeah,
also
I went
good.
To my the local one that we go to back at home, went there on Thursday, so a couple of days after I landed I was straight back there.
And Indian food is so much better than it is in Australia, because they can't do spice here. It's just not a thing, so they're just no good.
Yeah,
No
I
good
didn't
here.
actually I didn't actually go for a curry once in Australia.
Okay, well, you're not missing out on much. Can't do it as good. Now, if you were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, something along those lines, you need to win the jackpot, £1 million jackpot, but you need to use the phone a friend line. Can be anybody, family, friend, teammate. Who are you calling to get you this winning answer and why?
I'd call my uncle because he's very clever, knows a lot. I remember just growing up, he would he would know the answer to a lot of things. If I ever had any problems with tech or anything, he'd know how to fix it. So I'd call him.
Solid. Good, good. And finally, would you classify porridge as a cereal? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. It's definitely like a very
That is a rogue question.
Yeah, that's
yes, because yeah, just yes.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. It's very like one or the other. But yeah, that's all I've got for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. All the best with all your upcoming cricket. It's going to be super exciting to, you know, see you this summer for the Western Storm and hopefully in the 100. I'll keep my eyes out for the draft. But yeah, thank you again, and yeah, good luck with all the cricket you've got coming up.
Thanks, Lily. Lovely to meet you.
So that was London Spirit and Western Storm captain Sophie Lough. Again, super, super thankful for Sophie for coming on the podcast. Brilliant to see her down here in Australia. I actually commentated on the game that she was playing in against South Australia, so that was super exciting to chat to her again. But yeah, hopefully the people listening took something out of the interview, and I did, so hopefully other people did as well. But yeah, now we've got a bit of announcing to do, I guess, haven't
Personal
we?
Personal news. Yeah. A lot of personal news for the pair of us here.
Yeah.
This is quite a heavy one for both of us, but given it's your podcast, I suppose I'll let you run with it.
Yeah, so we've kind of had a lot of chats over the past month, really, and I'm moving back to England for the rest of the year, hopefully, if all goes to plan. And I leave on Wednesday, so this episode will probably come out around that time. So by the time you're listening to this episode, I'll probably be on a plane. So yeah, we obviously decided to temporarily pause, but Ollie is also leaving it, if that makes sense. So yeah. You've got lots of uni, lots of commentary, everything's quite hectic. Obviously, we went to two weeks to keep it going up until I left. But now that I'm leaving, I thought I'd just give it a small little break so I can get settled. I can kind of find my feet and figure out everything without having to worry about doing interviews and posting a podcast episode. So I'll just give it a break for a couple of weeks. I'll see where I'm at, and then I'll be back with another episode. Of course, this is not going to end anytime soon. But yeah, Ollie, you won't be joining me any further, will you?
Yeah, well, no, it's kind of sad, really, because I've really enjoyed it, but life's getting busy. Obviously, it's going to be tough to run the podcast on one side of the world and have you on the other side of it. So it's not a thing where, you know, we completely hate each other. It's, or from my point of view, it's the exact opposite. I hope it's the same the other way as well. But it's been a lot of fun. Obviously, I've done a lot of things through this podcast that I would never have been able to do otherwise. There's no chance I would have flown to Adelaide for New Year's Eve. There's no chance I would have gone for a WBBL doubleheader at Karen Alton. There's no chance I would have been able to interview some of the cricketers and speak to some of the cricketers that we've been able to speak to. So it has been a lot of fun, but life getting really, really busy. And it's just one of those things, really. But Lily, thank you for having me on. Thank you for keeping up with me for 6 months. That in itself is something, I suppose. Because some people have struggled with it for 15 years, so the fact that you've done it for 6 months is a fair effort. But obviously, we wish you all the best. You've got a lot of stuff going on. You've got commentary back home, back in the UK. You're leaving us behind, leaving Adelaide, and well, for now at least, and you'll do well. This podcast will still do well. I'll still be tuning in and listening to the interviews. It's a bit sad not to be a part of it, but it's a necessary step, I think, for me.
Yeah, well, obviously, thank you. And thank you for jumping on every single week for the past 6 months. It's been very appreciated and you've done extremely well. So thank you for all you've done for the podcast for the past 6 months. I really appreciate it. But yeah, that's kind of what we have to say, I think.
Bit of a bombshell.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody listening is just going to be
like, what?
Yeah, but before we move on, because I sense you're about to conclude from this point, from my point of view, obviously I'm stepping away from the podcast, but I just don't want to step away before I thank everybody who's listened to this and who's listened to our interviews. From my point of view, like, the messages that we get on Twitter sometimes and the comments we get and the posts we get, like someone saying, oh, that was a really good interview, I really enjoyed that. It genuinely, it's day altering. For me, I can't speak on behalf of you, of course, but for me, it just puts a smile on your day and it just improves your mood. It's one of those things that when you get people listening and you know people are listening, it's so good. Obviously, we can chat to each other for hours. We have done in the past, and it's nice to be able to broadcast this to an audience. So thank you to everybody who listens in and will continue to listen in when I'm not here. Obviously, this is growing. It's a podcast that's got a lot of quality to it with the person on the other side of the screen. So keep listening in, and thank you for all the support.
Yeah, obviously, thank you so much to everyone listening. Like Ollie said, pretty much everything he said there, I can completely agree with. But yeah, it's been super fun. So thank you for coming on board for quite some time, Ollie. I really appreciate it. But like I said, it's definitely not the end. We've had a couple of swaps and changes here and there. But like we said, we're always moving and we're always growing. So we'll see what happens. I'll keep everybody in the loop on social media. So make sure you tune in to our socials to keep in the loop and find out what's happening. You can do so by checking out our Twitter and our Instagram or TikTok at howsatTCP. And if you ever want to get in touch, you can via email as well at howsatthecricketpodcast@gmail.com. But yeah, make sure you stay tuned. Obviously, there'll be a little bit of a break for now, but I will be back. So like I said, keep your eyes peeled. Keep us in your mind because we'll be back. But yes, thanks for listening this week, guys.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
How's that? You messed about.